All right, we'll call to order Tarrant County 911 Emergency Assistance District Board of Managers regular meeting for February 28, 2022. With that, we'll move to item two for any agenda announcements. Any agenda announcements? All right, then we'll move to consent agenda. We have a motion on the consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve.
We have a motion, second by Chief Steele. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Let's move to item four, Executive Director's Report.
Next gen 911 update. Charles Conley is supposed to be here for Mission Critical Partners just to give us an update on, we have a kickoff this Friday for our next generation 911 assessment of where we're at, where we need to be, and where we're going. And that assessment, once we kick it off, will take anywhere from 60 to 90 days, and I'm really hoping we've got a good picture of, hopefully, a roadmap to get us where we're going and what those next steps will be. So I did not get a notification that he wasn't coming, but if he does show up and he wants to give y'all, or if y'all have any questions for him, he can ask for those.
Okay, great.
And Renee is going to tell y'all about the public hearing.
It is next month at our board meeting, and it will be published in the Star Telegram March 4th and the 11th.
Is this the public hearing on the existence of the district?
Yes.
Same time we cover the fees again in that issue?
No, there's two separate hearings. This one is, you have to recertify that the district is working and beneficial to the citizens. We have to do that every 3 years, so.
Should we be worried, Wayne?
Well, I don't know, ask these people. It's their call.
We're okay.
Thank you.
All right, let's move to the assistance program, programs.
Would you like me to speak on this?
I would love that.
Okay. So the board has been in conversations with district staff about funding to support next generation 911 fees and infrastructure, and finding ways to cut costs where we may be able to save some dollars to help support. One of those initiatives was to take a look at the ECC assistance program, and A, make sure that the expenditures year to year are matching up with the criteria, and then two, to maybe revisit the criteria, to support the hiring, training, and equipping of the 911 first responders. So the subcommittee has met, discussed the assistance program itself, and has made some recommendations on how we might be able to assure that mid-year this year, and then make some overhaul changes to the fiscal 2023 year assistance program. So I believe those recommended changes are in page 13. Oh, I'm sorry. Starting on page 11 in the packet. Some of the major proposed changes are going to be on page 15 of the packet, which starts to narrow down expenditures that lend to attracting, retaining, and equipping the first responders. So things that are proposed to cut out are things that are not mission critical, like uniforms, office equipment.
Coins,
filing cabinets, those sorts of things. Those really should be expenditures that we believe are funded by the individual agencies, not the district.
Any comments from the board?
No, I'll just comment real quick that I completely support this. I appreciate the great work that you did shepherding the process. The only thing that I would also ask is if we agree to go in this direction, that we send this out officially to cities with an expectation prior to this year's budget preparations for the following fiscal year, which generally speaking start in May, June around here, is my understanding. So everybody has a notice of expectations well in advance of budget preparations. Anyway.
I agree. I think that there's a lot of that stuff that needed to be cleaned out, and then it was a lot of excess. I don't know, I guess it just over the years just became an expectation. It shouldn't be part of the expenses on it.
Well, what the spirit of this always have been, or the spirit of this program has always been, when the district had excess funds, which we're having discussions here about how the district doesn't have excess funds. We're having to try to come up with, what was it, $18 million to support next generation technology, which is huge for the telecommunicators in the district to be able to efficiently provide the level of service that we want to provide and meet our consumers where they're at. So I think these changes, I would like to propose that some of these go in place mid-year, and then we make some additional changes to the fiscal year 2023 allowable expenses.
Okay. Any other comments, Mayor?
No, I mean, I'm in agreement. When we went through that, there's a lot of things on there I didn't agree with, and I couldn't believe we were paying for them, so I'm glad to see it. So.
It's good to put controls on the bureaucracy. So, do we have a motion to implement these changes effective?
I don't know how many we have now, so let's see, mid-year would be approximately April. So that should give us about a month. So I'll make a motion that we make some mid-fiscal year adjustments to the ECC assistance program effective in April 2022.
We have a second?
I'll second. I'll go ahead.
Second by the mayor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. It's done.
Thank you.
Lisa, what do you have? No, I think you're getting ready to cover it. We talked, you said, in April. Just keep in mind that the applications, they're due June 30th. That is the deadline. So just so you guys are aware of the call.
So I would recommend that we probably try to send these changes out ASAP and have them acknowledged, just like we did the original 2021 fiscal year ECC assistance program guidelines.
Do a survey?
Yes, that would probably be good. Just to have an acknowledgement. Whatever the form was that we did for the...
I'll have to go back and check.
I think it was Survey Monkey.
I do believe it was Survey
Monkey. Thank you. Just your attention on this. So today and in the past, the assistance program deadline is midnight on June 30th for any assistance. And at that time, it rolls over to from a primary PSAP to secondary. And I wanted to ask the board if we have, right now we spend about half of our funds, our assistant programs funds, we have about 4 months left. If by the deadline date of June the 30th at midnight, we don't have any more come in, can I reallocate, would you consider reallocating those funds, those leftover funds, to the next gen project?
I would defer to the board first. I think Fort Worth may have an issue, or do you have an issue with that?
No, I just, not off the top of my head, I'm just trying to think through it. That's why I'm kind of, you know, the...
Why don't we give you 30 days to come back and evaluate that? Is that...
I mean, in principle, it seems like a very reasonable idea. However, there's also expenditures regarding communications that could benefit from, I mean, with the growth of the community and tower needs and all that kind of different things. I just want to make sure we don't get too far out in front of ourselves saying yes, and we haven't thought about what other additional funding opportunities there might be for growth needs in the far north or the far south, down along Chittenden Trail, down towards, you know, the county lines that we really are. So that's my only.
Well, and to Sherry's point, she's saying if there are no additional requests made, so we have a burden as the end users to make sure that we are making requests that meet the program guidelines by the June 30th deadline. The other thing I want to say to that is I agree with you. However, we're having a conversation about sustainability with NextGen 911, and I would think that with the mission of the district to support those efforts, that would take priority over radio towers and other things where we're talking about fundamental infrastructure for the 911 technology to host the 911 technology across the district.
I don't disagree.
Well,
and are there other funding sources, maybe like you mentioned that?
Certainly. I don't disagree with any of this, but I think affording Mr. Brunson a chance to weigh in and also the county and maybe an additional evaluation report from their perspective, I think would be the due diligence we need to do in advance of a deadline.
What's our, what would be the financial impact there? What help? What would be the amount transfer? You said half?
No.
No.
We've spent half. From today, we spent about half of the assistance program funds. So we have a good chunk of money in there to
ballpark, though. $4 million?
No, it's
way. How much money do we have?
Total, we have $2 million in radios and $1 million in assistance. So if we have spent half, so we will have around
500, 400.
So that's what we have to get us through to that June 30th.
Oh, this is radio, though. I'm sorry. Is this radio? This is radio.
About assistance.
But I think what I'm understanding is everyone's got a deadline. Deadlines. If there's money left over, the secondaries get consideration, right?
Yep.
But yes, but if there's no projected consideration, we should be able to go ahead and move the money over is what the ask is, I think. Mm-hmm. If we just give the secondaries a little more time to see that we're in the right spot of that decision, that's the only thing, because I just want to make sure that
it's reasonable 30 days, but just to make sure.
Yeah. Then we can come back the next meeting and formalize a decision, right? I mean, there's no... So that give Chief Davis a chance to go back and evaluate the secondary PSAP issue.
We're basically talking about $500,000, somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million at this
point. 1.5 million.
So there's 1.5 million left in both accounts, or just
together. Okay. So you've got 4 months to spend that much money if you want to.
I would be happy at the next meeting to come back with numbers or come up with a meal to have. We'll be a little closer to June, and we can work something there.
That'd be helpful. Just so we all can see that.
I guess the other thing to that too, from, you know, I don't want to speak for the county, but from Fort Worth standpoint, you know, you mentioned earlier that they're helping you put together a plan for next generation.
Yes, sir.
We need that ASAP.
We do.
You know, I need to be able to walk into City Hall in Fort Worth and say, this is why we're cutting these plans. This is why we're transferring this money. And not just, trust me, okay, I sit in the meetings and just go ahead and trust me, David. I need to be able to slide the plan across the table and say, this is what the state's putting in. This is where we're gapped. This is what the recommendation is from the board, and this is my recommendation back to you to support.
Yes,
I need to be able to do that to keep from getting my head lopped off in City Hall.
Agreed. Levi, out of curiosity, we're talking about the secondary PSAPs. How often do we have surplus left in those funds that we are? How often do we actually have surplus left in those funds? It was my understanding that typically we don't have surplus for the secondary PSAPs.
So I did go back during my research before I presented a few meetings back, and we do actually have leftover surplus funds. Most of the time those are reallocated. The past couple of years they were for in or out purposes, but we do typically have some funds left over. And just again, this is throwing out guesstimation. I want to say around 300,000 probably in interop, and I'm not sure about a PSAP assistance. I'd have to go and do some digging, but I'd be happy to bring those numbers.
But that's after the secondary PSAPs have already made any requests.
End of the year, yes. End of the year, what we have left over. And I'd be happy to put something together about that as well for everyone for the next meeting.
Thank you.
Anything else?
So we'll move that to next month. Appreciate y'all's attention.
So if you could connect with Mr. Bronson and make
a number
two, so we could be prepared for the next week.
Mm-hmm.
OK. Okay, so I guess we'll move to presentations.
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone. We have Clayton Rogers from our audit firm. He will be presenting our annual audit report.
Thank you all for having me. Thank you, Neil. My name is Clayton Rogers. I'm a CPA with Patil Brown Hill, based out of Waco. And I'm here to divert you away just for a few minutes from the more exciting things like Next Generation 911. I'm here to talk about the numbers. At the risk of killing all the suspense, everything was good. That's kind of the place everyone wants to know about. But in all seriousness, what we were engaged to do is perform a financial statement audit of the district's, all of the district's books and records, and audit the financial statements that are in front of you for the fiscal year ended September 30th, 2021. And so the goal of the audit at the end, after we have planned and performed all of our procedures, is to render an opinion on whether or not these financial statements that are in front of you are materially right. As part of that, we are auditing public funds here, and so the federal government, the GAO specifically, levies some additional audit requirements on us as a firm, in addition to that that the industry gives us. And in this attached letter that's separate from the report that you should all have, at the end of our audit, under government auditing standards, we're required to report certain things to this board. It would be things like, for example, in the course of our audit, if we had identified fraud significantly, waste, abuse, if we had found significant problems with financial record keeping, if we had had significant disagreements with management over how to account for things, we would be required to disclose any of those things to you. However, fortunately, none of those things came up, and so this letter is all very boilerplate, and if you looked at it last year, it's about the only thing that changed is the dates. So, as far as internal control deficiencies, any of those types of things, there was absolutely nothing to report. So if you will open up, if you have the hard copy in front of you, the comprehensive annual financial report, I think the good place to always start is in the beginning. If you'll jump to page one. Page one is the independent auditor's report, which outlines in much more formal verbiage what I was just describing. It is outlining what we did as part of our audit and what management's responsible for. Management of the district is responsible for these financial statements and everything that's in them. Our job is to audit them and to render the opinion. As part of that audit, just to give you a few more real-world examples, it involves everything from confirming bank accounts. So when it says we have this cash balance in the bank, we're not just taking internal documents, we actually go to the bank to find out, get something from them that says, yes, they actually have that much, and that matches what their records are. We look for certain financial trends and analysis, things like we're looking, did certain expense accounts go up or down? Was there something really strange looking here? To help guide looking and digging down into the details, because at the end of the day, we can't look at every transaction, we can't look at every account. That would be take too long and be too expensive. So what we're going for here is reasonable assurance. One of the things, for example, that we spent a little extra time this year looking at was, I believe it was at the beginning of fiscal year 21, that you guys had your first rate increase in quite a while, is that correct? So that then when we're looking at the revenue numbers, we would expect to see an increase. So those are all some examples of the types of things that we're doing. And at the end of that audit, ultimately we're going to gather this pile of evidence and render an opinion on the financial statements, which, if you jump to page two, at the very top of the page you can see our opinion paragraph. And in that paragraph, we render what's known as an unmodified opinion. You might also have heard of it referred to as a clean opinion. And what that means is that as a result of our audit, in our opinion, these financial statements are materially accurate and reflective of the district's financial position and operations for that year. That there would essentially be nothing missing, omitted, misstated that would affect the decision making of yourselves, potential creditors, or anyone who would be interested in using these financial statements. And again, as part of our audit, we would be required to report to you certain significant problems. And at the end of the day also, you know, sometimes there are things, maybe adjustments that pop up. But without boring you with all of the details, to give you the big overarching idea, these financial statements are not wildly different than the information you've been looking at. It's definitely not something where, oh, we thought we were doing good, but then the auditors came in and they had to adjust a bunch of stuff, and now when they say it's right, now we're actually not doing good. That's not the case at all. And I would like to thank Anil and all the district staff that worked with us. They were all very forthcoming. They were giving us all the information that we asked for in a timely fashion, and they really have everything in good straight shape to make it an easy, clean, successful audit. So I'd like to touch on just a few high points for you. I don't want to put everyone to sleep here in the middle of the day. If you'll jump to page 6 with me, I wanted to point out just very briefly the district's financial statements and a couple of things on them. So these two pages on 6 and 7 are the district's, what we call the basic financial statements. And you have three columns here on the two statements. One is the balance sheet, and then the other one is your income statement as of the whole year. These three columns, the one on the far right where it says general, that's more of the numbers that you're used to looking at. It's what we call modified accruals. So when you purchase certain assets, those are just considered expenditures rather than the increase of an asset. And then we have an adjustments column, and one thing that the accounting standards require for us is that we produce that leftmost column, the statement of net position, and the statement of activities. And what those are is that is, you might even think of them as the district-wide financial statements, that includes all of the other long-term things, such as fixed assets, the compensated absences liability, and everyone's favorite pension liability. And on the next page over, on page 7, I wanted to point out just a couple of things. These district-wide financial statements are the thing that probably would have changed the most, and that's simply because most of these items only get adjusted once a year for the financial statements. For example, the pension information, that gets valued once per year, so it's really not practical to update that number more than once per year. But I wanted to point out one thing that was a little different. It kind of is just about the biggest single number on here. Halfway down page 7, you'll see an item called special item, clocks in at $3.2 million. It's only on the leftmost side. And what that was, that came from the adjustment of the pension liability this year. As we dug into this, we actually reached out to the actuaries at TCDRS. And what it was is that the actuaries are looking at when you guys elect a cost of living adjustments for retirees. And that essentially when the last, I think it was 2020 and 2021, y'all had not elected a cost of living adjustment. And so that, based on their policy, the actuaries kicked off that they're no longer going to assume that those are essentially automatic going forward. And so what that means is they think that your future pension expenses are going to be a lot cheaper. And so that special item, you can see it's a pretty big number that increased net position and decrease that pension liability. I wanted to point that out because it's kind of a big change that runs through this year. But we will, over time, expect to see that pension liability. It goes up, it goes down, it goes in circles. But you can see in the rightmost column, the general fund, again, the numbers that everyone is most used to seeing. even without all of these changes in pension expenses and all of those types of things, the district still did increase its fund balance by about $500,000 after all was said and done. And so one of the ratios that we are most interested in, and that many of your city councils and commissioners' courts are also most interested in, is how much reserves do we have? How many, the ratio we call is days in fund balance. And so you can see right here on the page, the bottom right number, about 17.7 million of ending fund balance. If you compare that to the total expenditures above it of 18.3, you have almost a year of expenditures and reserves. And I'd like to point out that that $18.3 million number does include much of the PSAP type equipment that you guys were referring to. That is something that even as a part of normal operations, you've got almost a year in reserves. And again, that amount did increase compared to last year. But again, overall, everything was good. Financial position is looking very healthy. Revenues definitely increased and would expect to be continued upward. And it was a clean audit. We really appreciate all of the staff's help. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the audit or the financials. Or if everyone would prefer that I stop talking.
No, I think it'd be great just verifying that the numbers are reliable, consistent, nothing too much out of the ordinary. Appreciate the notation. It's nice to have a good report. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Just a quick question. What, in your experience, is a average or expected fund balance in days or months?
Great question. So the people in suits who sit around all day talking about this, they recommend no less than about 3 months, which would be around 25%, 3 to 4 months, 25 to 33% is kind of the minimum. And that, so even whether that's a small entity like this or even say the city of Fort Worth, they think that that's a good benchmark. Being up closer to a year in fund balance, which is 2 to 3 times that, could be something that if you were sitting here setting a property tax rate, you might think, hey, it might not be real popular if our fund balance just keeps going up and up and up. However, it is something to note that from our perspective, that extra reserve would not be considered excessive simply because you guys are contemplating a special use of it. That it's not that we're growing it with no plan for it, but that it actually is going to be used for something in the future.
Right. So the 3 months is a matter of cash flow, I guess, essentially. And then, yeah. But the fact is we are preparing for significant. So I think this would all be reflective of that we're in the right position.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Very nice presentation. All right. We'll move to the next item, which is the budget kickoff.
The budget kickoff. I just want to let y'all know that we have had our budget kickoff last Friday, and we're beginning to see all the teams and directors and managers cut their budgets. I'm not a very popular person right now, but you know what? We're going to get there. And we are going to be coming to the table with projects to match our budgets so that y'all will know at any time what our master plan is going to be going forward. So we're excited about it. Neil's already slashed mine, and so we're working on that too.
Okay. Look forward to future updates on that. That would be great. So we'll move to briefings. Phil?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. I'm sorry I couldn't be here last month. I was going through my second round of COVID.
Oh, no.
So I should be bulletproof, hopefully, for a while. As you can imagine, with Election Day tomorrow, there has been very little, if any, activity in the Capitol. No interim committee work. In fact, trying to get meetings with staff, you find that they're taking personal leave right now. coincidental timing of campaigns for their bosses. So it's all about the elections right now. As of this morning, turnout is extremely low. It's roughly a little bit less than 10% of our total registered voters who have early voted so far. When you compare that to 2020, we had 25% registered voters vote. And then the last time we had midterm elections in 2018, it was something around 16-17%. So it's really low, which is going to obviously impact these down ballot races where the folks who are coming out and voting are the people who are really engaged and really passionate about these issues and the candidates. As far as to your question, who's going to win? I wish I could tell you. I can tell you that I feel like Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Patrick are really safe. I think they're going to go through and not have any sort of runoff through these primaries. Now, in November, it could be a little different, but for the primaries, they should be safe. Some of the more down ballot statewide races, like the Attorney General's race, I think we're probably going to see Attorney General Paxton come through with a primary runoff opponent in May. Whether that's Ava Guzman, former Supreme Court Justice, or Land Commissioner George P. Bush, it's tough to say right now. And speaking of Land Commissioner, that's another statewide race where it's an open seat since George Bush is running for Attorney General. You've got at least 8 Republicans running in that, and none of them have great statewide name ID. So turnout is really critical for these type of races. In the Senate, I don't really see, we have 5 open seats, but none of the incumbents are in any real danger. In the House, you've got closer to, we have 26 open seats in the House. We've got at least 40 incumbents facing primary opponents. And in many of these races, you've got 5-6 people running in these primaries. In our area, the only one that I see that's it's going to be pretty tight is House District 91. That's Representative Stephanie Click, who's part of Fort Worth and North Richland Hills. She could either win this thing outright. She's got 5 people in this race, but she's got a very strong challenger in David Lowe, who's a combat veteran, former military policeman. There's a lot of money being put into that race. And in other down ballot House races, really by the same groups that we've seen for the past 20 years, a couple of billionaires out of West Texas who funnel their funds into different PACs. And they are, last election cycle, they were pretty low key. This election cycle, they've been getting really involved in these past 2 weeks. All that to say, after tomorrow, we will have a much better idea of how things are going to shake out for next session, which means I will be starting to set up meetings with these members so that we can start educating them, re-educating them on why we have to have a fee increase for Next Generation 911, and then work to identify who our champions are going to be in the House and the Senate. Now, James White carried our legislation all through the last regular session. And in the special session, he knew nothing about 911 before we met with him and became a passionate advocate for us. But he's running for ag commissioner, so we're going to have to find someone similar to Mr. White that the speaker's office and then we'll sign off on, and then, of course, the same thing in the Senate. But again, we will know more after tomorrow.
Any questions for Bill?
Thank you.
All right, we'll hold.
Thank you.
Hold our breath. See what happens. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate all you do. Thanks, all you do for us. All right. Anything else from the executive director?
Yes, sir.
That's why I call a meeting. No, any comment from the public? Seeing no public comment, declare the meeting adjourned. Get some work done.
Last month's meeting.